I personally believe that everyone can really enjoy and love learning languages. That's why I'm here. At the end of the day, there's 7-8 billion people in the world. A good portion of them want to learn a language. It takes 600 hours, and it's our job to encourage them to learn the language and to try to want to master it, you know, giving yourself a long-term goal and persevering towards that goal. EdTech was always in the process of disrupting traditional education. We are a German company, but we're international in every sense of the word. In my heart, in my soul, given a lot of dynamics that are going on in the world today, I believe in building cross-cultural bridges.
Welcome to Speak Like a CEO. Becoming fluent in a language takes time and commitment, an effort that can be considered a lifetime investment. Today, Lena and Oliver talk to Michael Shankwan, CEO of Lingoda, an online language school that has helped over 60,000 students learn English, German, French, and Spanish. In this episode, learn all about the cultural quotient, as well as the parallels between fitness, language learning, and business building. How to communicate change internally in a fast-growing edtech startup and be the CEO of a company that you have not founded. Enjoy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Speak Like a CEO. My name is Lena Carlson and I'm here with Oliver Oust. Hey Oliver.
Hey Lena. Our guest today is Mike Shankwan. He's the CEO of Lingoda. Lingoda is one of the leading online language schools, and Mike's a really interesting character. He used to work for Procter & Gamble. He used to work as an investment banker for Goldman Sachs. And a few years ago, he founded Lingoda. He's fluent in 6 languages, lived on 4 continents, and grew up bilingually, and we're very happy to have him. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Oliver and Lena. Thank you for having me today.
Happy to have you on here. So Oliver and I are stuck in gray, rainy, cold Berlin. Whereabouts are you?
Well, I happen to be in California. We also do have a lockdown very much like Berlin, but of course it is nicer weather. So if there was one place I had to be in a lockdown, I think California would be a good place.
Yeah, I think it sounds like an absolute dream right now, the warm weather and then maybe just the beach, and then you really don't need anything else right now.
Exactly.
Mike, a very interesting background. So maybe you want to catch us up on, you know, what's the origin story of in particular of Lingoda?
Yeah. So, you know, with Lingoda was started by Fabian and Felix Bunderlich. They're brothers from Cologne, Germany. And they saw this opportunity to launch Lingoda many, many years ago. And we are now Europe's leading online language school. We offer 4 languages, English, German, French, and Spanish. And we offer live group classes with live teachers. What we're doing is disrupting the offline brick and mortar language school that you see around the corner in big cities. These typically have a high fixed costs. They have large classes of 10 to 20 people, and they have limited availability of classes. And what we basically do is take that experience and we bring it online. And the classes are much smaller, 3 to 5 people. And most importantly, we offer it 24/7, anytime, anywhere. So for example, Lena, if you wanted to learn German and you were a B1 level, right? If you went to an offline language school, you would have very little opportunities in terms of when you could schedule that. They would tell you maybe 3 p.m. on a Thursday, and you would say, well, great, I have a full-time job. I'm busy. I can't do that. That's where Lingoda comes in, is that you can actually take the language at any time.
I can't think of a better time, actually, to take language learning online when everyone is stuck at home. But even before that, I would say that there's a few kind of psychological hiccups people have when it comes to language learning, especially as adults. You know, I'm sure many people listening to this podcast actually like live in Germany, but maybe from, you know, different countries. And I'm sure we've all struggled to learn German and sat in these classes, for example, you know, which, as you said, are, you know, from 4 till 6 p.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and you have to travel there and then you basically get no interaction. And you come out thinking it's a waste of money and I haven't learned anything. Why do you think this classroom model doesn't work for language learning? And how does Lingoda kind of change this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's a few things. I think one is that there's too many people in the class, right? So like you said, there's 10 to 20 people. And then if you have the teacher talking half the time, then at the end of the day, what you want to do is communicate. Right? You want to communicate in German. And if you don't speak, you're really not communicating. And it's most important actually to speak to native teachers, right? So I think that's one thing missing. I think the second thing is that, as you were saying, you know, we're all busy people, right? And we want to be able to fit more into our day, and we want the language class to fit into our day. And if you have to go to this language school, it takes you 1 hour to get there, sit down, you know, 1 to 2 hours for the class to happen, another 1 hour to get back and to do something else. So it's basically taking your entire evening. Whereas with Lingoda, you know, we're a German company, so we are, of course, very efficient, right? From minute one to minute 60, all you do is you log in. There's a very specific curriculum in terms of what you follow and learning outcomes in those 60 minutes. You only have a couple of other people in the class, and the focus is on speaking. So you're in and you're out. And in 1 hour, that's pretty much it versus 4 hours. So those many different things actually work so that you can learn the language on your time.
Why do you personally believe that learning languages is important?
Yeah, this is actually very, very important. I myself am a polyglot. So I speak six languages. I speak the four that we teach at Lingoda in addition to Japanese and Chinese. And at the end of the day, I look at it as this evolution. And when we think about communication and leadership, communication starts with language, right? It's all how we communicate is the language we speak. And so when you talk about working with other people, associating with other people, right? I see this evolution of, we talk a lot about IQ, right? And that evolution from IQ to EQ, which is the emotional quotient. I would add one more, which is the cultural quotient, which is CQ, right? And in this era of globalization and connectivity around the world, it's actually critical that you understand the different cultural components and all the different cultures that you're actually working with. And the best way to actually understand a culture, at the heart of a culture, is the language.
You personally grew up bilingually and you lived in different continents. To what extent has your personal experience influenced your thinking on this matter?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I'm Chinese American. I am from California. My parents are from Taiwan. I grew up in the States. And I've always personally had a passion for languages you know, have studied all these languages since I was a kid. And it's allowed me to travel and see the world and to experience different things. So I myself have actually lived in, 7, 8 different countries across 4 continents. And I've traveled to almost 100 countries. And in these different places that I've actually experienced, people are very different, right? And cultures are different. And language very much influences those cultures. So I found myself in very cool and interesting situations, sometimes absurd and crazy situations. And I want to be able to share that with other people. And I think by innovating in language learning and inspiring and motivating people to learn language and thereby build cross-cultural bridges, this is a great way to inspire the world to connect with each other.
I really like that. And I think obviously learning a language is a super important thing. Here in Europe, I think almost everyone you meet speaks 2 or 3 or 4 languages. Whereas by contrast in Australia, where I'm from, you know, most people speak one and they've probably done a little bit of something at school, but it's not the norm. What are some of those benefits of learning the languages that carry on into later life and into work and everything else that we do?
Yeah, that's, I think Lena and I share that in common somewhat, me being from America and you being from Australia. I think there's a lot of benefits. I talked a little bit of this, what I believe this, increasingly this transition from IQ to EQ and the emotional quotient is more and more important as you go up in your career. As you take on bigger positions and you work with different people. And so understanding that cultural component is absolutely critical, and language is the best way to do that. You know, I'll use like, simple example is like, so I started studying German when I came here. I studied a little bit before I was here. And I think in learning German, I realized that that Germans communicate differently from Americans or from Anglo speakers. And it comes down to, for example, that the verb is in a different place for English and for German, right? So English is one of those languages where the verb tends to come in the beginning. And in German, it can come in the middle, come in the beginning, or go in the end. And so what I learned in working with Germans is that often the conversation will proceed that they will actually make a point by telling a story and starting from the bottom up and then actually coming to their point at the very, very end. As an American and a native English speaker, we tend to do it the opposite way around. We tend to come up with the point of view first, and then if you need backup, that we will offer that backup.
That's so interesting. I never really thought about that, because you do find that with language, there's also different ways of telling the same stuff. It's not just a direct translation of the words.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. It's the way your brain is processed. Right. And so we tend to think that way. And so when I was working, with Germans, and they would offer their point of view, offer mine, like, you can see where the cultural collision happens. Right. And just by actually recognizing and being aware of yourself and where you come from and being aware of the other, it already is like 2/3 of the battle for you to work more effectively with other people. I'll give you another extreme example. So I've lived in Latin America and I've lived in Japan. In Latin speaking languages, Latin cultures, people tend to interrupt each other, right? In the most positive of ways, right? It's because like the verb usually is like literally the first word in the sentence. And you can tell if it's past tense, what the subject is, all of it in the very first word. In Japanese, it always comes at the end. It always, always, always comes at the end. And then the negation also comes at the end. Whereas in Latin languages, it comes at the beginning with the verb. So here again with Japanese, you know, you've got people who sit there and they politely like look at you and they wait. And then even when you're done, they don't necessarily react. It's not because like they're trying to hide something from you. It's part of the way that they think in the language. They wait for you to completely finish, right? And in a Latin culture, it's exactly the opposite.
That's really intriguing. And I'm also intrigued by the concept you mentioned earlier, the cultural quotient. Is that something you came up with, or what does that entail? And, you know, what shaped your thinking of this?
Yeah, I listen to a lot of podcasts like your podcast I read a lot of books. Somebody along the way has talked about the cultural quotient, because I was trying to think about inspiring people to explore different cultures. My last startup was in educational travel, right? So in my heart, in my soul, like I believe in building cross-cultural bridges. And I think that a lot of people talk about the EQ and the emotional quotient. And I think somebody along the lines, I started to talk about a cultural quotient. And I said that, hey, you know, given a lot of dynamics that are going on in the world today, some people who are effective and some people that I don't perceive as particularly effective, the cultural quotient is also important, not just the emotional quotient. So that's a little bit of where I got that from, was, somebody had talked about a cultural quotient, and I wanted to extend that in a dialogue that people could understand.
I find this so interesting. We've like been doing this podcast now for 2 years, and we've never really touched upon this cultural aspect of communication as in-depthly as we have done just like the last, say, like 10 minutes here. But I wanted to go back to language learning and Lingoda for a little bit and just talk about that one hiccup that I guess you guys are ultimately trying to solve in the first place, which is language learning for adults and how best to do that, how efficiently to do that, and how you essentially convince people to use your platform over some other kind of tools, such as, I know Duolingo is this app that's quite popular here.
Yeah, so our message is very distinct from most of the innovation that's happened in this space, including Duolingo, including Babbel was actually also based in Berlin and a whole host of other companies. Those are what we call asynchronous in education. So it's one way, right? And so it's a software app interacting directly with the user. That is often good for an A0 or A1 user, a casual hobbyist who wants to go to Italy next week and learn how to order a coffee, right? But at the end of the day, it's very hard to progress significantly in a language if you are not speaking it and working with a native teacher day in and day out, right? That is the soul of language learning. And so what we say is, listen, there are many different ways to learn. You can learn through the apps, you can learn through the classes, you can learn through Lingoda. We take a very transparent approach and we say, listen, it takes, according to the CEFR framework, which is the European framework for language learning, it takes 600 hours to learn a language from beginning to end with live teachers, right? And we can't change that for you, right? We're going to be transparent and honest. It does take 600 hours, right? But what would it be if we could help you get there each step of the way? And using technology, using the way that we actually structure our products and sell our products to help you along that path. One of the most difficult things, and Lena, you and I have probably both experienced this in learning German because it's so difficult, right? Is that, you come upon these blocks and frustrations and you're really improving. And the reality is that it's all about, struggling and then getting back into it, right? And building a daily habit over time of learning it all the time. And so this is what our products do at Lingoda, right? So we have like all different types of challenges, like marathons and sprints. And what this actually does is it gets people to build a daily habit, call it 20 to 30 days. And in the long term, right, once you actually have built that habit, as human behavior is, then it actually becomes easier, right? So we tell people, listen, I want to be real with you here. This is what it actually takes. But we are here with you every step of the way to help you get there.
Interesting. And I think we've all tried to learn languages at school. And I think schools are notoriously bad at teaching pupils languages. I think I had French at school for, 8 or 9 years. And you graduate without really speaking the language. And similarly for English, actually. So I learned these languages by living in those countries and by total immersion. And it's often said that young people, or your children, etc., they have higher neuroplasticity, so that in theory they should learn a language quicker. However, it doesn't happen because the mythology is off. And I think this is what hopefully Lingoda could provide, right? That the mythology is actually thought through. It's more along the lines of total immersions rather than big classroom, few hours a week, dragged on over years and years and years. And thereby sort of having a superior methodology and immersion, which more than makes up for lower neuroplasticity. Is that a fair summary?
That is absolutely right. And if you ask our head of digital education and the methodologies that have been studied and used in universities, is that that is what it's all about. And that's what our curriculum actually does, is that it focuses on the speaking and to help you to speak and to use it day in and day out. The other thing that's different is that we innovate all the time. So we are constantly getting feedback on our curriculum, on a particular lesson, on a particular page, on a lot of different things. And we, in real time, make changes and improve upon it. So in a lot of the old models, right, you have a book, Langenscheidt might publish a book, and it'll be there for 10 years, right, and a little bit obsolete by the end. With us, we're constantly finding, okay, how can we actually help people learn the language better, motivate them, help them speak better, and so that those changes are constantly happening.
On the business side now of Lingoda, have you guys faced a particular change or challenge or crisis recently when it came to communications, and how did you as a business have to deal with that?
Yeah, we've dealt with a lot of changes, I wouldn't necessarily call it crises, but one of the big things for us has been that we've grown so quickly. So when I came maybe 2.5-3 years ago, we were about 20 people. We're now 140 people, right? We might have been a couple hundred teachers. Now we're 1,200 teachers. right? So the question is how do you communicate change effectively when things are changing so quickly? I always tell people, hey, you know what? We used to be a Mickey Mouse company in the most positive of ways, to explain why we are making those changes, right? And to repeat over and over again, right? And to tell a very clear, simple story that people can understand and can digest and accept change very, very effectively, right? So I think one of the most important things is actually to manage the expectations of our teachers and our employees. So to over-communicate for sure some of those changes, to explain why we are making those changes, right? And to repeat over and over again, right? And to tell a very clear, simple story that people can understand and can digest and accept.
That makes sense. And I was just curious, so you came into the company as the CEO, but you didn't found the company. How is that process actually for you?
Yeah, this is, it's interesting. I'm starting to make a career of it. It's actually my second company that I'm doing that. It's, you know, it is one of those things that it's somewhat unique in the Berlin startup scene, because you typically have the founders that they stay on. It has been surprisingly such a wonderful, positive experience for me. You know, I've built a very strong relationship with the brothers who are the founders. We trust each other. That is, I think, the base of so much that actually has helped us work extremely well together. You know, I think in the beginning, too, what's really important, they always talk about to listen and absorb and take in. And so I think in the beginning when I started, it was really important to just to understand, right, and to see what was going on versus run up and take action. We all want to take action. But I think in the process of communication, it's extremely important to see the situation and then realize that each situation is absolutely unique. And I think that that has helped us be successful as a transition team early on. And in doing so, like in the last 3 years been an incredible experience for me. I think the other thing that's actually worked is, you know, as a Chinese American that is living in Germany and having experienced and lived in many different cultures, you know, we as a company, we are 42 nationalities and 27 languages spoken, right? We are a German company, but we're international in every sense of the word. And I think that what has helped for me is also when we talked about learning different languages and experiencing different cultures and being aware of the self and being aware of the others, is that building this culture of inclusion, which makes it a very powerful organization and force, that my background has helped me to be able to be embraced, right, by the culture. And that has actually made a huge difference in the last 2 to 3 years as we evolve as an organization, as a company.
I definitely agree with that. And I think more and more it's becoming super important for people working at the company that they believe in the founder and their mission and they're aligned on that vision. And I think obviously for a language learning company, it certainly helps that you understand these different perspectives and can drive that vision forwards.
You mentioned rightly that it is relatively rare that the founders leave the company, leave their own startup after a few years. Why did the brothers decide to leave and hand over the reins to you?
Oh, well, actually, they are still with the company. They are, I call it 150% with the company. The two brothers, one is the CFO and the other is in charge of sales, and they are still MDs. And so they're still with the company. You know, the three of us envision running the company together for the long term. I think you'd have to ask them as to why they felt comfortable about it. I think everybody realizes what they're really good at And where are some skills that they're looking for to bring outside of the company? And I think that's one of the most important things, is just realizing what you're good at and where you want to hire from the outside. And I think they recognized that there were certain things that an outsider could contribute to the business, somebody who's actually who's done that before. And in particular, somebody who's familiar with outside markets. And so they looked at a few things. They said, okay, this is really important, and we want to bring those skills in. And I happened to be around and happened to have those skills. So I think that's probably how it worked out in the end.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's very interesting. And it suggests a very high degree of self-awareness to say, I step back from that position as CEO, hand it over to someone else, because I'm very much aware of what my own strength and my own genius zone is. Potentially, there are billions of students out there who would want to learn a language at some point in their lives. How far do you think Lingoda could go?
Do you mean in terms of the number of languages we offer, or in terms of like the depth in a language?
More the number of languages and the number of pupils or students you could attract.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I think for now, my vision is I'd love everybody to learn a foreign language and to master it and to learn it in depth. Right now, we are focused on the four most spoken languages, the four most learned languages in the world. Those are the things that provide a scale so that we can actually provide the language 24/7. And, you know, for the foreseeable future, we will continue to grow and teach these four languages. Over time, though, I can imagine us there's also demand for other languages as well. And one of the things that we do really well, Oliver, is providing access, right, to students from anywhere around the world, to teachers anywhere around the world. And so if you wanted to learn Swahili, or you wanted to learn Hindi, or you wanted to learn Chinese, that is very much possible on our platform one day. At the end of the day, you know, there's billions, 7-8 billion people in the world. A good portion of them want to learn a language. And it's our job to encourage them to learn a language and to bring it to bear in terms of having them to learn it, to try to want to master it, right, and to learn it very, very well, and to use that in their daily life. So we see the market potential as very, very big. Last they checked, like $60 to $70 billion.
Wow, that's super impressive.
Yeah.
And as we wrap up, I wanted to know your thoughts on the future of edtech and where you see it going. So education technology.
Yeah, that's a really, really great question. You know, I think edtech was always, I think, in the process of disrupting traditional traditional education business models. COVID for sure has accelerated that because now we can actually people accept the ability that this to do something online versus offline, and that it actually really, really works. You know, I think the key challenge will be how do we do this in a way, and how do we communicate effectively when we aren't face to face? Right. So I think that a lot of things you can do online, but there are also a lot of things that are missing in the educational experience. And so how can we continue to innovate with the technology so that it's as if we were face to face, although we're not? I think that a lot of things you can do online, but there are also a lot of things that are missing in the educational experience. Your facial expressions, you know, 93% of communication is nonverbal. You know, as they have studied. So, and so much of these online experiences, it's going to actually be about the nonverbal part, right? Because we aren't face to face. So how can we actually improve upon that? Because at the end of the day, if we were to connect with each other, like, we have to also be able to read the nonverbal parts, right? Because that's that's ultimately how we do communicate as human beings.
Yeah, that's a very good summary of where we are. And before we let you go, I need to ask you about your interest in bodybuilding, your former competitive natural bodybuilder. What is that and what drew you to the sport?
Yeah, well, so I was a nerdy Asian kid back in the day with very skinny arms. And I got into health and fitness. You know, a lot of the things that drives me to learn a language and to master it is the same things that how I got into health and fitness. And so it's about, you know, giving yourself a long-term goal and persevering towards that goal. It's very much, you know, how you become fluent in a language. It's not about talent. And, you know, what I saw about health and fitness and competing was very much the same thing. Is that I actually did not have any advantage in this. In fact, I had a disadvantage. I'm a small guy. I have small bones. I'm not really designed to be a bodybuilder. But you know, I started working with a fitness coach, and I got really, really into it. And I saw it as like, you know, a wonderful challenge to be able to do this one day. And I actually had many disappointments on the way there over the course of 6 to 7 years, including, you know, not making it on stage, not making it onto a competition, not being able to adapt my body in that way. But I overcame each of those challenges. And I think that's what life is about in a lot of circumstances, right? And now I can look back on it and say, wow, I've also learned how to maintain a healthy body, and I keep those principles with me. And yeah, sure, it doesn't help to be able to share with kids or friends in the future, like, hey, you know, this is how I looked once. But that was the inspiration. A lot of it is the same as what inspires me to learn languages. And I continue to this day to, you know, to work out actively. And that keeps me fit both physically and mentally.
I agree in the parallels you point out between language learning and following a sort of health and fitness goal over a long period of time. I mean, there's a certain element of discipline and grit, but it helps if you also enjoy the process to some extent. How important is that in your view, sort of to actually wanting to learn the language, to like the sound of the language, or to enjoy, you know, lifting weight, for instance?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely important, right? So, you know, if you have no interest in French culture, right, like, okay, don't learn French, right? It's okay, you know, learn something else. I think a fundamental interest in the culture is important. A fundamental interest in some aspects of the language are important, because you need, like, at the end of the day, a motivation. What I've also learned too is that, I mean, when I was younger, like, I was very much driven by the end goal, like what? Okay, to compete in the international competition, to become fluent in Spanish and pass my C2 exam. At the end of the day, that's not the thing that's really going to, that's not the thing that you should be driven by longer term. What brings you joy is actually that process, right? So what are the things that you can, that brings you joy day in and day out in doing that, that then gets you to the end goal? And the end goal happens to be there at the end, right? But what is it day in and day out that you actually, you know, lifting each weight that you lift, right? Could you lift a little bit more next time? Feeling it mentally in your muscle, right? Same thing with the language, is that you're really like enjoying like pronouncing those words and learning the grammar, right? You love your teacher and you find it very engaging to meet students from around the world. I mean, you do have to find those things that fundamentally motivate you. Otherwise, it becomes a big battle, uphill battle. I personally believe that everyone can learn languages and can really enjoy and love learning languages. And that's why I'm here. And that's why I do what I do every day.
Mike, it's been such a pleasure chatting with you today about languages, and definitely motivating me to get back to German lessons. So thanks so much.
Well, you know, we've got Lingoda, so...
I should really brush up my French.
Okay, we've got French and we've got German. So next time I come back, I'll expect you guys have to have... advanced the level by that time with our free classes.
I pick up the challenge. And very interesting to hear about cultural quotient. I think this is something that will stick with me as a third dimension addition to emotional quotient and intelligence quotient. Cultural quotient is definitely real, and I look forward to reading a book on that, Mike.
Okay, all right. One day when I have a chance.
One day. Thanks for chatting to us today, and thank you for listening.
Thank you so much for your time.
Are you passionate about a topic that you want to make heard more strongly? A good way to start is by building your personal brand. Become Unignorable and check out Oliver's book offer, including 4 bonuses to set you up for success at oliverouse.com/